So we thank you for tuning in to this KZSU 90.1 FM broadcast, and stand by for another exciting edition of the Lunch Special. Music from Haiti for this Monday afternoon. Welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special. And today I'm honored to be joined by Hilton Obenzinger, PhD, Associate Director at the Hume Writing Center, Honors and Advanced Writing Lecturer from the Department of English here at Stanford. And welcome to KZSU, Mr. Obenzinger, Professor Obenzinger.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you have an amazing past we've been talking about, and I don't even want to get into that right now. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. You brought some amazing music today. And who was that you just played?
Well, that's a group from Haiti called Atis Independent. This is from a record that was put out in the 70s of a an anti-Papa Doc revolutionary group. So this was originally from the early 60s, these were people fighting not just, Papa Doc before Baby Doc, before whatever is happening now. Basically it's a song that says, welcome, come together. Stand up, be alert, get ready, take what you need, hit the road, don't delay, let's go. It's basically starting out. It's really a beautiful record.
You have a connection with that album too, right?
Well, right. It's put out by a record company called Paradon Records.
Who is that owned by?
Well, Barbara Dane, great blues singer, jazz singer.
From right here in the Bay Area.
Exactly.
Good friend of yours too, right?
Right. And I worked on the record label for a little while. Before CDs destroyed, the vinyl, and then actually all of the records are part of the Smithsonian now.
Really?
The Folkways Smithsonian collection. And these are all records from liberation movements around the world, including a liberation movement from Haiti at that time, the 60s and 70s. And
this is what Barbara did with her label?
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you know, political struggle protest songs from the U.S.
Wow.
So
I never knew
really
that part about Barbara Dean. I've known her to be a blues singer, but I didn't know she had that other side.
Well, yeah, she had that other side. You know, she was blacklisted during the McCarthy era. And
nowadays, that's a compliment.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean... she played with everyone, you know, Lightning Hopkins,
yes,
all on TV and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what she did is say, you know, forget you. I'll just go ahead and do the stuff that I want to
yeah
do. So she traveled all around the world and still sings. She sings in the Bay Area. So this was like an incredible a collection of records from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I figure, you know, we need to do honor to Haiti.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. And thank you for that. Hilton Obenzinger, PhD, is our guest for the hour today. And you brought so much great music. We better get into it as quick as we can here. The theme today.
Well, the theme is hard times. What's going on now? Bouncing back and forth between music of the 30s and even earlier versions of it today. You know, similar songs back and forth. For example, if I could say, starting off with Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, sung by Al Jolson, the Yip Harburg classic song, and then followed by a version by Barbara Dean.
Let's hear it right now on KZSU.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember, I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built the tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime?
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mile. When there was earth to till or guns to bear, I was always there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, Bobby looks swell, full of that old Yankee doodly-do. Half a million boots went slogging through hell. I was the kid with the drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? To tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to till or guns to bear, I was always there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Hey, don't you remember they call me Al? It was Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember I'm your pal? Brother, can you spare a dime?
The Bay Area's own Barbara Dane, and if you don't know about her, Google that name, because that's a prolific artist. That and I hope she'll be on these airwaves with me on my Blue Show, but that's a whole nother story. Here today with Hilton Obenzinger, PhD, Associate Director of the Hume Writing Center, and two great versions of that wonderful song.
Yeah. And in fact, there are a lot of versions of it. Bing Crosby has a version. Rudy Valley has a version from back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and there are some contemporary versions also, such as Barbara's.
And it keeps coming out, too. Dr. John did a version about 4 or 5 years ago for a homeless right. Hunger CD.
Tom Waits.
Yeah. Apple. Did a great version of it.
In his characteristic
inimitable
growl.
Style. you put together some great sets here, too. We got one coming up that's two different versions of the same song.
Well, you know, when times are hard, you got to somehow look at the bright side. And there's the classic song from the 30s is Charlie Chaplin's song, At the End of Modern Times, Smile.
smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile with your fear and sorrow. Smile. With gladness, hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile. The sky.
The Wonders of YouTube. That's what we played that off of. That was Michael Jackson and his and the song Smile, and the original version of it before that by Charlie Chaplin. My guest today, Hilton Obenzinger, PhD, Associate Director, the Hume Writing Center, and so much more, and we'll get into that after a little bit. But that was beautiful, man. What prompted you to bring that?
Well, I was...
I
was exploring, the different versions of that song, and I came across that. There are a lot of versions now, I think Sting, Bublé, a lot of people have sung that song. It's really one of the more beautiful songs of all time. I don't know,
You're acting like a DJ now, you know that.
Well,
You were a DJ, weren't you?
Well, when I was in college, yeah.
Yeah, you were on college radio.
Yeah, but I told you I got thrown off the air.
For what?
Well, it was a classical, classical music.
You were supposed to be playing classical music?
Yeah, and I did, except that I slipped in the Beatles as classical music.
And they threw you off the air for that?
Well, then I also interviewed Allen Ginsberg, in between the classical music, and then
they didn't like that.
Well, then for a part of it, I also played sound effects because, you know, it was kind of like
so you were a prankster.
This is music of a different sort, you know.
You were kind of pushing the envelope.
I was pushing the envelope. Yeah, I wasn't trying to screw it up.
Now, and then once he kicked you off, did you ever get back on, or that was it?
No.
How long did your radio career last?
Probably around a month.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, some Beethoven, Bach. I mean, I love all that.
Uh-huh.
My taste is very eclectic in terms of music, but and I played plenty of it. But
how's it feel to be back on the air?
Well, it's a lot of fun. I've been, you know, interviewed on radio shows. You know,
I was going to say
for my books and things.
Yeah, like you're a prolific author, and you've probably been on many interview shows, huh? On book tours.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. You're born in Brooklyn, New York. You went to Columbia, and you were at Columbia in '68, and you were part of the takeover that was part of the anti-Vietnam War protest.
Right.
And speak about that a little bit. You were a student activist then.
Well, I wasn't that much of a student activist. I wasn't part of the SDS or anything like that. I was a writer. I was part of the writing scene.
Uh-huh.
But I also went to all the demonstrations, and when one event led to another, and students took over five buildings, and I was part of the group that took over the president's office in Lowe Library, and we spent about a week in this occupation with all kinds of confrontations out in front of the building, and eventually after negotiations broke down, the university called in the police. 700 people, more than 700 people were arrested, 120 or so people went to the hospital, and it was a very bloody...
Why did they go to the hospital?
Well, the police were really pissed off.
Oh, they beat them up?
Oh yeah, it was a real you know, going through the gauntlet type thing, and it was pretty bad. One of the buildings was occupied by the black students, and there was the other issue besides the war was the gym that the university wanted to build in Morningside Parks, adjacent to the university that overlooks Harlem, and you know, 20% of the gym would be used by the community, the black community, and you know, and the students would go in through the front door uphill, and at that time all of the students were men, and the vast majority of students were white.
Mm-hmm.
The big innovation in diversity at that time is that they let more Jews in.
But not blacks, not people of color.
They let some in. I think in my class there were 12 blacks allowed in. So black students took over that building because it was, we called it Jim Crow, you know, GYM Crow, because of the overt segregation, you know, that it projected. This was right after Martin Luther King was assassinated, and
it was a crazy year, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was a very intense year, but the police were very ginger with the black students, and the black students were very responsible in the way that they handled themselves. They were the core of the whole thing, because the university did not want to trigger a riot in Harlem, which was a distinct possibility, and the danger of the university being burned to the ground, which was a distinct possibility.
Were you aware of all that while you were going through it? Did you realize, really?
Yeah, you know, the way I characterize it is that we knew that the black students in the Hamilton Hall, the main classroom building, that was the A-bomb that we had. You know,
it was your secret weapon.
That was our deterrence, because they were very nervous. You know, at first they wanted to arrest all of the other buildings, all of the white students, and they were mostly white, so there were a few Asian. It's hard to imagine when you think about Stanford today.
Yeah.
There were only a handful of Asian students, a handful of Latino students, and, you know, very, very few black students.
We were talking off mic too, and one of the students that was there with you is a guy named Juan Gonzalez, who's a journalist in New York, and also the co-host of Amy Goodman and Democracy Now, right?
Yeah, that's right. And he was joking that he would call a meeting of all the Latino students, and they would meet in a phone booth. That's how many Latino students there were.
And you guys did a 40th anniversary.
Yeah, in 2008 we did a 40th anniversary conference, not exactly a reunion.
Didn't take it back over?
No, there were some jokes about that, but no. And really to reevaluate what was happening then, to understand what was happening. And there were many profound things we learned. Mainly we learned from the black students how deeply racist the experience was being at Columbia. One student, student then, said that it was the worst 4 years of his life, other than, who came from the South, other than when his wife died of cancer. I mean, that was like,
wow.
That was electric. And what is he now? He's a judge in Atlanta. Right? You know, so there is this whole image of the, well, you know, some people went off the deep end. There's one of the leaders who's in jail for life because of an attempted armed robbery. But there's also one of the people involved is in Congress. There are judges, you know, people in business. But most people have still maintained a kind of, you know, anti-war, critical attitude about race and war and social justice in the country. So that's 400 people came.
You're going to have to come back in the near future and be on the next hour of this Monday thing, because that we deal with that heavily. Another thing I wanted to talk about was between your time at Columbia and when you came to Stanford to get your PhD, right?
Yeah.
And between that time, you became a commercial writer. Mm-hmm. And you worked on some interesting stuff, including a history of the New York Fire Department.
Yeah, I was contracted to write the history of the New York Fire Department by the Firefighters Union.
What year was this?
Well, that was in the early 80s. And I wrote the book, and it was a 1,200 historical photos. And
they let you have the whole package, huh?
I'm doing research in the library. At that time, the union and the offices were right near the World Trade Center. They moved to Brooklyn long before 9/11 happened. But and I wrote that book, but the president of the union lost the election because of a funny money thing that was a scandal. Plus, the company I worked for went bankrupt simultaneously. I had already started writing my own book of poems, dramatic monologues about the history of New York City from the point of view of its fires, called New York on Fire. And so I said, look, they paid me already. But I said, here's your book. Here are your photos. I'm keeping 100. Do with it as you will. And I don't think the union ever published it, but my book came out. And
how was it received?
Well, it was well received, especially in New York, but in other places too. It was nominated for a poetry award, so it got a lot of good reviews, and it's still out there.
And you have your latest book,
yeah.
Called Busy Dying.
Yeah, which is a takeoff from Bob Dylan's line, he not busy being born is busy dying.
Is this kind of an autobiography?
Yeah, it's autobiographical fiction. I had to fictionalize.
Change the names or protect the innocent.
Yeah, and I struggled a long time. At least in my case, I don't think I could write a memoir without lying, so I figured I might as well make it official.
Never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Well, you know, it's like I question my memory. It's not even, you know, and then when you make it into fiction, you can make composite, you know, scenes, you know, but I also, it goes back and forth between 1968-69 when I was a student right afterwards, which is a whole adventure going to the Yukon, but also interacting with students today, and the kinds of realizations, epiphanies, that students get today, going back and forth, and all kinds of coincidences. For example, a graduate student came to me, and I won't go into the whole story right now, but he said, you know, did you have anything to do with the high school in Long Island that he went to? And I said, no. When in the 80s, the high school humor magazine was called Hilton Obenzinger.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they take that from your name, or was it
yeah.
just
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. And apparently they did. I don't think I... It's hard to come up with that combination. So I thought someone saw one of my books. It's a funny name. It's an unusual name. So they went with it as... but, you know, in the book, it goes through... We went through kind of like a little detective work and eventually found the people who worked on the magazine, started the magazine, the teacher that guided the magazine. And actually, I even went to a reunion of Hilton Obensinger. And it was it was hilarious to walk in and say, hi. Is this Hilton Obensinger? I'm Hilton Obensinger.
So, oh, wow.
So that's also woven in. So there's this kind of going back and forth about how people understand things, realize things, going back and forth in time, things of that sort. And dealing with, you know, the death of my brother. And there are a bunch of, you know, emotionally autobiographical stories in there also.
Busy Dying is the book, and published by Chax, C-H-A-X, mm-hmm. And came out in 2008 or 9?
No, 8.
2008, so it's a... What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a book based on the series that I do of at Stanford of How I Write, which is talking with people on their work, whether they're a chemist like Dick Zare, who just got a award from President Obama for teaching, which was great. Or, you know, Yvonne Boland, a poet, or, you know, history, anthropology, engineering. So everybody has to write.
You're interviewing different professors.
Yeah, we have a conversation. They're up on Stanford on iTunes, some of them at least. I've been doing it for now 8 years, and I've got like 50, 60 of these interviews. So I'm putting a book together based on these talks and also working with students and others on kind of different issues about how do people learn how to write, how do people deal with style, what happens when you get stuck. And people are incredibly idiosyncratic. You know, the faculty at Stanford are very idiosyncratic. You know, they've got their own way of doing things.
Sure.
Some of it is very, very strange. But not all of them are strange. But, you know, they're all, you know, uniquely their own.
For sure. I've had 150 of you in here in the last 4 years, and I'm amazed every week. I just love to show up and just see what's going to happen, you know?
Right.
It's always something different. And today is very special. It's an honor meeting you and being on the air with you. Hilton Obensinger is our guest. And why don't we go ahead and play some more music, some of this great music you've brought. And next up is a set.
Well, it's a set of two Yiddish songs, Mein Ruheplatz, My Resting Place, which is a song of women garment workers, you know, in the early 20th century that, and ironically, you know, in Haiti, a lot of women were working in the garment factories and were dead at their sewing machines. And this is a song of, you'll find me at my sewing machine, bury me at my sewing machine because of what it's like to work there. Then Zognik Kemal, which is the Warsaw Ghetto Resistance song, and sung by Paul Robeson, you know, one of America's great singers. So many of my students have never even heard of him, you know, all-star football team, every actor, movies, civil rights leader. But in any case, he was a fabulous singer and a kind of a resistance to oppression song.
Here we go.
Such mich wo die Myrten grünen, gefinst mich dort nicht mein Schatz, wo Lebenswelten bei Maschinen, dort ist mein Ruheplatz, dort ist mein Ruheplatz. mich, wo die Vögel singen, gefindst mich dort in nicht mein Schatz. Ach, glaub bin ich, wo Käten klingen, dort ist mein Ruheplatz. Dort ist mein Ruheplatz. Nicht such mich, wo Fontanen spritzen, gefindst mich dort in nicht mein Schatz. Wo Tränen rinnen in Zähner kritzen, dort ist mein Ruheplatz. Dort ist mein Ruheplatz. Und liebst du mich mit wahrer Liebe, doch komm zu mir, mein guter Schatz. Und heiter auf mein Herz, mein Ruheplatz, und mach mir süß mein Ruheplatz.
Say that you have reached the very end, when then skies a bitter future may portend. For sure the hour for which we yearn will yet arrive, and our marching steps will thunder we survive. For sure the hour for which we yearn will yet arrive, and our marching steps will thunder we survive. Not made but blood inscribed, this bitter song we sing. 'Tis not a caroling of birds upon the wing, but 'twas a people midst the crashing fires of hell that sang this song and fought courageous till it fell. But 'twas a people midst the crashing fires of hell that sang this song and fought courageous till it fell. Mit King Mollers du gehst dem letzten Weg, den himmlen bleine verstellen bleue Teg, weil kommen wird noch unser Reus gebänkter Schau, uns wird er beugt und unser Trott mir seinen Da. Weil kommen wird noch unser Reus gebänkter Schau, uns wird er beugt und unser Trott mir seinen Da. Geschrieben ist das Lied mit Bluten, es ist nicht ein Lied von unserer Vögel auf der Frei, das hat auf Volk zwischen Talen dicker Wend, das Lied gesungen mit Nagames in die Hand. Das hat auf Volk zwischen Talen dicker Wend, das Lied gesungen mit Nagames in die Hand.
Them saddest bound in jail wouldn't let nobody go their bail. Keep your eye on the prize and hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. All the silence open and they walked out. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. wore three links of chain. Every link said freedom name. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. Hold on. Yeah, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. Well, the only thing we did wrong stayed in the wilderness too long. Keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Oh, keep your eyes on the prize and hold on. Only thing we did right was the day we began to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. My journey now. Keep your eyes on the prize and buddy, hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Now keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Now keep your eyes on the prize and hold on, hold on,
folks back east, they say he's leaving home every day, beating a hot old dusty way to the California line. Across the desert sands they roll, getting out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find. Now the police at the port of entry say, you're number 14,000 for today. Oh, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, folks, you ain't got the do-re-mi. Why, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi. You want to buy you a home or farm that can't deal nobody harm, or take your vacation by the mountains or sea. Don't swap your old cow for a car, you better stay right where you are. You better take this little tip from me, 'cause I look through the want ads every day, but the headlines on the papers always say, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boys, you ain't got the do-re-mi. Why, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
Come, gather round, people. Wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you'd better start. So women, how you sink like a stone, for the times they are a changing. Come critics and come poets, criticize with your pens and keep your eyes wide open. Chance won't come again, and don't speak too soon, because the wheel still in spin. There's no telling who that it's a name. They are a change. Come, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway. Don't lock up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside, and it's a raging. What you can't understand, your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your own root is rapidly changing. It is cast, and the slow one now will later be fast. And as the times are rapidly, rapidly changing, the first one now will later be last.
1973, Josephine Baker, and been here in this hour with Professor PhD Hilton Obenzinger. And Professor Obenzinger, that was amazing. You found that on YouTube, and tell the story about that briefly, because
It's just one of the wonders of Facebook and all of the ways people can communicate. Someone sent that to me, and I didn't even know that Josephine Baker sang that song. People may not know, you know, she was the great singer, a dancer from the 1920s, and this was from a concert in New York in 1973, and I believe she died in the 70s, but she was famous, you know, in Paris for her famous banana dance, where she wore a skirt of bananas.
She had to leave the United States, where she was born, after a race riot.
Right. I mean, you know, just another great performer who has to go to, you know, France or somewhere else.
Yeah.
A lot of black writers and performers, of course, went to Paris. So that it just blew me away. What an incredible version of that song.
Singing a Bob Dylan tune.
Wow. and, you know, before then, there were some other, you know, those, you know, Woody Guthrie, of course, and the Mein Ruhe Platz was done by the group The Klezmorim.
Yeah.
Which, who were at least started out here in the Bay Area.
Hmm.
And, you know, of the revival, one of the early groups of the, in the mid-70s, of the Klezmer revival, the, you know, Eastern European Jewish music,
mm-hmm.
Yiddish music.
Well, I want to thank you for coming today. And if folks want to find out more about your work or your writings, your book, or your just your musical picks or whatever, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, they can send me an email at obenzinger@stanford.edu. Obenzinger.
Great. And please, please come back, okay?
Oh, and that would be a pleasure.
This has been wonderful. And what are we going to go out with?
Well, we're going to go out with, we had to go out on something, you know, uplifting. The Carter family, you know, in the 1930s on the Keep on the Sunny Side.
All right. Thanks again.
There's a dark and a troubled side of life. There's a bright and a sunny side too. Though we meet with the darkness and strife, this sunny side we also may view. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all the way, if we'll keep on the sunny side of life. Crushing hopes that we cherish so dear. Clouds and storm will in time pass away. The sun again will shine bright and clear. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day, it will brighten all the way, if we'll keep on the sunny side of life. Song of hope each day. Though the moment be cloudy or fair, let us trust in our Savior always, who keepeth everyone in his care. Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. If we'll keep on the sunny side of life.
The Carter family was Sunny Side of Life. It's a little bit after 1 o'clock, and you're in tune